Welcome to the CSIS podcast. I'm Colin Quinn. This week, we're talking about the standoff between the US government and Apple, one of the world's biggest tech companies, and on whose device you're likely listening to this show. It's a case that shows how the debate on privacy that was started by Edward Snowden's revelations intersects with the war on terror and the more recent attempts to track new terrorist networks. The Justice Department has asked Apple to provide access to the encrypted iPhone of one of the perpetrators of the mass shooting that killed 14 people in San Bernardino in December. Apple has stood firm and argued that the US government lacks the authority under law to make such a request. So why is Apple taking this stand? And what does this mean for how authorities can track terrorists? We hear from Jim Lewis, our lead cybersecurity expert at CSIS.
Well, it's largely kabuki, with everybody posturing. But it goes back to Snowden, which is Apple needs to demonstrate to its customers, its global customers, that it can be trusted not to just hand over data to FBI and that it will resist and all this. And it's a Snowden thing, and that's why Apple is objecting to FBI when they do far more for the Chinese security services.
What do you mean by that? What are they doing in China?
Well, in China, Apple's agreed to move their data centers to China and to have them hosted on China Telecom, which is a state-owned company. They inserted Chinese-designed encryption into the iPhone, and they made tweaks to the operating system, one of the operating systems, to accommodate Chinese security concerns. So that's a heck of a lot.
What makes this case, the San Bernardino shooter's phone, say different to other court orders to access phones in the past?
It's technically not a warrant for the content. It's a warrant that requires Apple to help the FBI get access to the content. So it's not like Apple holds the content. Apple doesn't have the plain text, and what they do for FBI won't give them the plain text, but it will help FBI get a little closer to being able to see what's on the phone.
And we talked about this being kind of a post-Snowden thing that Apple's reacting to. One of the big things that the Snowden revelations revealed was the reach and scope of U.S. surveillance operations. So in that world, how is it that then something as simple as an iPhone is being a source of such controversy? Is there not other sources that the U.S. intelligence services could have used?
So I was talking to a friend at the CIA about this, the encryption problem, and we both decided that the answer is from a musical, from the musical Cabaret, and it's the song Money Makes the World Go Round. And so, you know, an intelligence agency has lots of ways in. NSA, FSB, some of the PLA guys, they're all good, right? There's at least four intelligence agencies in the world that, with money and time, could probably get into the phone. The problem for FBI is that isn't going to produce evidence they can use in court. That isn't going to produce evidence that they can introduce without compromising sources or methods. And in this case, that might be something they would be willing to do, except they wanted to put Apple on the spot. And I don't know why Apple blundered into this. But generally, encryption, end-to-end encryption is a hard problem for NSA, but there's no such thing as unbreakable encryption. It's an immense problem for FBI and law enforcement because it puts people of interest out of their reach.
So we were saying that Apple blundered into this is to say that Department of Justice, the U.S. government, almost wanted to have this conversation.
Prosecutors are crafty people, and you would have thought Apple would have known that. The story reminds me of Winnie the Pooh, the scene where Pooh digs the big trap and the Heffalump trap and then blunders into it. And that's Apple is cast in the role of a small fuzzy bear with in this case. Of course, the prosecutors set it up. They were looking for a good test case, and Apple's on really shaky ground. They should have just quietly gone along and said, okay, we'll help out, as companies have done in the past.
A lot of people would disagree with that and say that, you know, this will lead to backdoors being put in all phones, that everyone's phone...
Oh, please, no backdoors. It's not about backdoors. Nobody wants backdoors. If somebody wants a backdoor, they're going to put it in and not tell you. You're not going to force you to put in a backdoor. FSB has put in backdoors. PLA has put in backdoors, probably in Apple products. But what we're talking about here is the difference between end-to-end encryption, which means only the sender and the recipient can see the plain text. That's beatable, but that's the theory. And recoverable encryption, which can be very strong, and an unauthorized third party can't see it, but it is possible for someone other than the sender and the recipient to recover the plain text and read it. And the classic example is Google. Google uses very strong encryption. You can trust those Google products. They're hard for intelligence agencies to break in a traditional manner. But Google wants to mine your traffic for advertising purposes, for data mining purposes, so they can recover the plain text. They can read them. They can have a machine look for keywords in the messages. So there is a solution to this. It's just not Apple's solution.
Is there something in the technology that is making this such a big deal? Like, if it was the San Bernardino shooter's laptop, would we be having a different conversation?
No, it's the same thing, which is that in this case, it is, you know, people want privacy. That's understandable. It's clearly a global concern. People want control of their data. Now, the interesting thing on that is when I say people want control of their data globally, they don't like NSA spying on them. Got it. They also don't like big American tech companies spying on them either. So we're facing a challenge here based on privacy. And in this case, the technologies that Apple created that give their customers some privacy, albeit limited in ways we don't fully understand, also got in the way of justice, and that's why they went after them.
How is this happening? I suppose, how is Apple letting this happen? How do you reconcile that other countries are able to make these backdoors and the U.S. is having such an issue?
The way they deal with it is they put out a press release that says, Apple cares about your privacy and security, period. You know, but in China, we have worked with the authorities to make sure that your privacy and security is fully safeguarded, or something like that. So they always open up. You know, other countries wouldn't put up with this nonsense. And that's the problem, not just for Apple, but for all American IT companies. As you see India, Russia, China, the UK, other European countries all saying, well, hey, we want access when we serve a warrant. And that's going to be the battle, not the battle that we're seeing now between Apple and FBI, but the battle over how do you access data, how do you control it, what are the rules. End-to-end encryption is less of a problem for some other countries because they don't have the issues we have. Data you collect here under a warrant can be introduced in court. Data that you collect under Title 50 may not be introducible. Now, there's a backstory to that, which is that we have this Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. It can authorize collection on Americans through a warrant. If an agency gets that warrant, that data can be used in court. But in general cases, in, say, a kidnapping or a drug case, you're not going to be able to go to FISA. You're not going to be able to go to FISA under FISA for child pornography. So there's a range of cases that fall outside the scope of our ability to collect under intelligence authorities. And that's why FBI is so worried about this. And I'm a little sympathetic to that. I mean, when you look at the cases, these are not people we want to be helping out.
You had a piece in the New York Times last week, a debate piece, and it talked about having an international agreement or some sort of international norms surrounding encryption and decryption. How would something like that work?
You know, the first time we went through the encryption drama, which was about, at this point, 16 years ago, most of the people who used the internet were American. Most of the products were American. America controlled the internet. Not true anymore. And we're going to have to come to understandings with other countries. And they have views that are different from ours. The Germans, of course, are more privacy sensitive. But they don't like NSA. They don't like American tech companies, right? How do we come to some understanding of how we will deal with data, which is flows across borders in seconds, is stored around the world? How do you get access to it? Under what conditions? We may not be able to do this with everyone, but certainly with some of our closest partners like the UK or others, we ought to be able to come to a common understanding. And just as a footnote, one of the reasons I know we can do this is we did this in 1999 and chose not to execute the agreement. So it is possible with our NATO allies to reach agreement on how encryption will be treated. And that was a policy decision having negotiated the agreement and then deciding not to implement it. The people who were the most annoyed were the French. The Chinese went off and did their own thing. So we can do this again if we need to. It'll be a little harder, and the issues are a lot tougher, but it's not impossible.
A lot of these are consumer products. So, you know, your iPhone, you know, laptop, even your internet service provider. Is there a certain amount of the market will figure this out? A phone that's going to be hackable by your government, you're just not going to buy it.
Hack and access are different, and that's one of the things that gets lost here. Your phone can be unhackable, but if I serve a warrant and the service provider or the manufacturer can give me access to the plain text, that would make people happy. Everything is hackable. It's just how much money do you want to spend? So separate hackable phone and recoverable phone. That's really what the debate is. And most people want to use recoverable encryption. You don't want to take pictures of your Thanksgiving dinner and then forget the password or something and not be able to get them back. People who are privacy sensitive might be willing to use these unrecoverable products. I understand that, but unfortunately, so are terrorists, drug cartels, and criminals.
We talked probably about 3-4 months ago about tracking ISIS and how the intelligence agencies are good at it or bad at it. When you see something as high profile as this and a company as high profile as this, not facilitating something like that and not facilitating more information being gathered from the authorities, what does that say about how this fight is going to go?
I'm sympathetic to Apple. Snowden did immense damage to American tech companies and to their brand and their reputation around the world. So they have to do something. This probably wasn't the case to make a stand on, right? Because people are concerned about ISIS, they're concerned, or Daesh, they're concerned about San Bernardino shooters, the lone wolf shooter. Apple has legitimate concerns, but this was not the case to make a stand on. Apple needs to show that it's going to follow the rule of law in the U.S. and other places. They need to rebuild trust in their brand, but this wasn't the case to do it on.
And that was Jim Lewis, bringing us to the end of this week's show. We'll be back with more next week, so until then, thanks for listening.